Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So Parliament has returned, but only for a day to pass through these new COVID restrictions. Katie, can you tell us what's been going on in the House today?
So when Boris Johnson announced on Monday in that 8pm address to the nation that he was going to enforce a third national lockdown, it was also made clear that MPs were going to return on Wednesday for a one-day sitting. That comes after last week ministers pushed back the recess date. So MPs are back again next week, but after today, the week is over. And ultimately, it's almost to do some housekeeping. So number one is to debate the third lockdown and the measures there. And we saw Boris Johnson today opening that debate. And there will be a vote, we expect. And I think it's quite important just in the sense that because there was such frustration among Tory MPs over Christmas, when Tier 4 was announced at the last minute, there was quite a lot of suspicion, actually, that almost numbers had a purposely planned to change the tiers after MPs have gone home. I think that this time around, they really wanted to give them space to have that debate. But interestingly, I do get the sense that in a way that the lockdown sceptics in the Tory party, they have calmed on this issue and they're moving now to a different debate, which is the debate of how many vaccinations before you can get rid of restrictions, rather than a debate about whether or not you should have lockdown. So there has been a shift there. But in terms of Boris Johnson's opening address, it was quite interesting because he was talking about the need for this lockdown. Obviously, there was grim data to point to, but he was also talking about when restrictions could be eased. And I think probably the line that's grabbed the most attention was him saying, you know, it's not going to be a big bang end of all restrictions. This is going to be a gradual thing. No, a big bang end of restrictions is what quite a lot of Tory MPs want. So I think what we're going to see now is, can they secure a gradual easing of a roadmap to a firm end? Or is this going to be something where the government doesn't want to give much away? So far, they don't want to make too many promises on it. And once that's gone, we have the vote tonight, and then there'll be coverage on Coffee House once we have the results. And then we've had Gavin Williamson facing the music of his schools.
And let's talk about schools in a little bit. But James, do you get the feeling that the government, even if they don't want to make this roadmap public, that they know roughly the timelines involved and how big of a scale of the challenge is?
Fraser Nelson and I have interviewed Matt Hancock for the forthcoming issue of The Spectator, available from all good news agents tomorrow. I think you're allowed, permitted use to leave your house to buy a copy of The Spectator as part of your daily shop. And he talks about these 13-odd million people by the middle of February, that target. He's very adamant that they can hit that, that the fact they've only vaccinated 1 million in the first month isn't proof that they're not going to get to 2 million a week and hit the target. Now, I think it's important to distinguish between two things here, which I think the government isn't being hugely clear about, which is, if you look back at what Boris Johnson said on Monday night, I think once you hit those 13-odd million people, the first four priority groups, then I think we are looking at a return to the tier system. And essentially what that means is, you know, schools would go back, that kind of thing. When you hit 28 million people, that's when Jonathan Van Tam talks about how you're accounting for over 90% of hospitalizations as well as deaths. And Matt Hancock in his interview with us is quite clear that when that pressure on the NHS has been dealt with, then he would consider that, you know, in his words, it would be time to cry freedom. And what he is essentially arguing is that they're not going for a zero COVID or a herd immunity by vaccination strategy. Rather, what they are aiming to do is to protect the vulnerable and then get rid of the restrictions, because the restrictions are designed to save lives and protect the NHS. So once you've done that, you don't need to keep the restrictions in place.
I think what's also interesting on this, separately, obviously, to the very interesting Matt Hancock interview that everyone should read tomorrow, is that one of the things you're hearing from Tory MPs, and yesterday evening, Boris Johnson addressed Tory MPs in a Zoom call. And one of the questions he was asked was, you know, obviously the UK started vaccinating first, but if you look at the per 100,000 population per million, Israel is way ahead, and people are saying, what lessons can you learn? Now, I think a slight comeback to that you're now hearing figures in government point to is, Israel's vaccination program, they say, is to vaccinate as many people as possible, as quickly as possible. Whereas they're saying in the UK, at least they argue that it is much more focused because it is about vaccinating the most vulnerable. So therefore you have a situation where it takes longer in terms of logistics and finding them out. And that's one of the reasons that they're different pace. So I get the impression in government, although there is some scepticism over whether or not they'll meet this February target, people are fairly happy with where they are on vaccinations. And they think that it's a government project that is currently, and I don't want to jinx it, going to plan. And that's partly because if you look at the EU and you look at Europe, the stories are so much worse there in terms of procurement, but also rollout. You look at the flak that both Angela Merkel, but particularly Emmanuel Macron is under. I just think there is a sense that whether or not you're the very top of that chart, where the UK is right now is somewhere where actually people in government are pretty happy with, and they just want to keep that and increase the rollout as you go. And it's not going to be a linear rollout where it's going to be 2 million per week, something Matt Hancock has tried to row back from, this 2 million a week. But they do think 1 week, you know, it might be much below that, and 1 week it could be quite a bit above that once you expand.
And James Gavin Williamson also gave that statement on schools that Katie mentioned. What did he have to say?
He's saying that there are going to be teacher-assessed grades this year. They, unlike last summer, they won't be based on an algorithm that was designed to deal with this kind of idea that the computers were being unfair and insensitive. I think you can't get away from the fact, though. Weirdly enough, a national lockdown should actually not require exams to go ahead because all schools are having to offer remote learning. So it's not like it was in the tier system where you could argue that pupils in the Isles of Scilly had a huge advantage because they were having completely uninterrupted education because they had very minimal COVID there and they're not likely to have to see the schools closed under the tier system. But I think the fact that the GCSEs and A-levels were immediately cancelled is essentially an implicit government recognition of how unequal the provision of remote learning still is, despite the experience of last March's lockdown. And I think this is one of the big problems that the government is going to have to sort out after this, which is people think that these lockdowns might have undone 10 years of work in terms of trying to close the attainment gap between rich and poor pupils. And I think that there is a clear problem here. There's also a clear problem that you've got 2 years now who will forever have stars by their exam results. How do you wash this out of the system? Because there is inevitably going to be some grade inflation this summer if you do teacher-assessed grades. Do you try and snap straight back to normal next year? Is that fair on people taking their A-levels in 2022 or their GCSEs in 2022 who will be competing against people who took their A-levels and GCSEs in 2021 and 2020 and had these teacher-assessed grades? There are all sorts of problems on this front. I think you saw them trying to push by saying that, you know, there is now a legal obligation to provide 3 to 5 hours of high-quality remote learning every day. But I really think this is something that needs to be kind of watched like hawks, because you've got to repair this educational damage and this educational inequality as soon as these lockdowns are over. I think one of the challenges of the government, obviously the main immediate political challenge, as Katie was saying, is vaccination. And that, I think, is what the general public will judge them by. But there are some things the government also needs to do to prevent the country kind of having kind of national version of kind of long COVID when it comes to kind of educational and social inequality. And that is going to have to be dealing with the problems that have been posed for education by these lockdowns.
Katie, how secure is Gavin Williamson's position, and do his colleagues think that he's the best man for the job to be watching this process like a hawk, as James says? In some of the morning papers, there were some pretty disgruntled comments about his performance so far.
Yes, I mean, at the lobby briefing today, I think the Prime Minister's spokesperson suggested that the Prime Minister did have confidence in the Education Secretary. However, as a Cabinet Minister, I don't think you ever want to be in a position where someone is having to say they have confidence in you. It tends to mean that there's a good argument as to why they shouldn't. I think in terms of Gavin Williamson's position, it's worth bearing in mind this isn't the first time he's received awful headlines, column inches and articles about how bad he is and why people think he should be sacked, and he hasn't been sacked yet. I think there is a question as to when there is eventually a reshuffle, which is the general expectation is that he will be moved. I think the general expectation is the reshuffle will not be for a while yet, probably like spring You want to be at a point where COVID does not dominate everything before you get into that. And I do think that if you're talking about Gavin Williamson's, you know, skills as a politician, one thing that people do think he was very good at was chief whip, and therefore a role which is more like chief whip or leader of the House and more about the workings of the Commons and the party is something that would better match, I think, what if you to be his skills.
And James, this morning as well, Robert Halfen, the chair of the Education Select Committee, suggested that teachers should be given priority vaccinations as well. But the government doesn't seem to be biting on that idea so far. Do you think that they should be considering it?
I think there's an interesting question as to, once you've vaccinated these first four groups, who then takes priority for the vaccine? I think there is a good argument for teachers. I mean, there are good argument for some other professions too, you know, that we've had reports of in the first lockdown, policemen being worried about people spitting at them in an attempt to kind of give them COVID and stuff like that. And obviously, if schools were the one big thing to reopen in February after that half term, there would be a case, I think, for pushing teachers to the front of that queue. But I also think that what they're trying to do with this vaccination programme is to essentially break the link between cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. And I think for that reason, I would be wary about trying to promote one particular group over another. The exception I would make is I think there is a case actually for prioritizing NHS workers above over 80-year-olds on the grounds that if you can get your health service staff vaccinated, you are essentially expanding your hospital capacity. If you look at the problem with the Nightingales, you've created these makeshift hospitals very rapidly, but it's very hard to staff them because you've got such a level of staff absence at the in the NHS at the moment because of COVID and self-isolation. So I think there is an argument for prioritising NHS staff. I am less persuaded of the argument for prioritising teachers at this moment in time. Obviously, as you get nearer to the hopeful reopening of schools in late February, that might change. But I think the real challenge is to break the link between hospitalisations and deaths. And then we will find this whole virus much easier to deal with.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And do read that Matt Hancock interview in the magazine tomorrow, or you can find it online as well. Thanks for listening.